ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I wasn't aware he did it. I'll probably go and have a word to him. Yeah, that's obviously not the way we want to win, but obviously heat of the moment, stuff happens, but I'm sure he would have fixed it up after the game.
That is Brisbane veteran Dane Zorko speaking to the ABC in the wake of the Lions' big victory over the Demons. It was a win that could redefine their season. So why is everyone talking about a crybaby gesture? Ben Cameron is going to tell us. The AFL is living a year of insults. It's a round of absolute corkers in the NRL. We'll break down why in a moment. And Soundbites is headlined by a Masters commentator who saw his career flash before his eyes. That soon. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Ben Cameron calls AFL for ABC Sport. He was at the MCG to call Brisbane's shock win over Melbourne. Ben, the story should be the Lions' victory, but instead we're talking about Noah Answorth mocking demon Harrison Petty as a crybaby. Why is that maybe a bigger deal than it sounds?
Well, there's a lot of history between these two teams, Pat. So you go back to 2022. Dane Zorko was involved in a verbal altercation with Harrison Petty. It escalated to the point that Harrison Petty was visibly upset with whatever Dane Zorko had said to him. So at a quarter time break, he was seen crying and speaking to some of the Melbourne assistant coaches. And then from that point on, there was the ensuing storm in the days that followed. And Zorko came out and apologised and said that he went too far. He also suggested that it wasn't one-way traffic, that certainly there was a bit of to and fro between the two players, and that was how it got to that point. Then at a later meeting, Lincoln McCarthy actually gave Harrison Petty the crybaby symbol again. And then we've gone back to the well again here in 2024 with what happened between Harrison Petty and Noah Answorth last night. So we were told that Brisbane spoke about it throughout the group and that they understood that they'd probably gone too far. The question I now wonder is whether that conversation was genuine and they thought, look, we probably don't need to be getting stuck into Harrison Petty about the fact that he showed his emotions and was crying at quarter time after a comment from Dane Zorko, or whether the playing group haven't taken this as seriously as they have portrayed publicly. Those would be my questions in the wake of it.
What kind of fallout would you anticipate, if any at all, or is this just going to live and die with this media cycle?
Possibly live and die with the media cycle. I'm sure the AFL probably aren't overly thrilled with it. I'm sure there will be media commentators who speak of it in terms similar to bullying. Whether it actually is resultant in a financial punishment, I'm not so sure about that. But I'm sure the AFL will condemn it. I'm sure Melbourne will condemn it. And I'm sure even Brisbane will say, look, that's not the way we want to go about it. And we saw that last night with Dane Zorko. We did our post-game interview with him and he said this.
I wasn't aware he did it. I'll probably go and have a word to him. Yeah, that's obviously not the way we want to win, but obviously heat of the moment, stuff happens, but I'm sure he would have fixed it up after the game.
Yeah, great get from the ABC team. Talking to the man who was so central to the initial incident back in 2022, the whole thing has overshadowed a crucial win for Brisbane. How could this victory reshape their season?
Oh, well, they've got some tough games to come, so they really needed it. I mean, they've got Geelong and GWS, who are two of the informed teams in the competition. It absolutely could, though. So it was billed going into the game as Brisbane's forward line against Melbourne's defence, and Brisbane's forward line delivered. So they are the whipping boys when they lose. Joe Danaher, Eric Hipwood, even Charlie Cameron, who is widely loved, has had a poor start to the season.
20 in front. No angle. He's missed it to the right. That is a shocker from Charlie Cameron.
You can't sugarcoat that, but they delivered in spades yesterday. And outside of that, I have never seen Melbourne's midfield get whacked like they did last night.
But Brisbane are all over the top of Melbourne. They lead by 32 points.
30 to 16 inside 50s.
26 to 14 clearances.
Wow.
I can't remember a time in the era of Christian Petrarca, Clayton Oliver, Jack Viney with Max Gawn as the ruckman, them getting beaten as badly as they were. All of those guys were down on their numbers. And the Brisbane midfield, I mean, they sat on Lachie Neal, Melbourne. Cam Rayner looked like, I don't know, the second coming of Patrick Dangerfield, crossed with Chris Judd, crossed with Lachie Neal last night. He was outstanding early on.
Lines back out by seven. Gawn winning the tap, but onto it, Rayner gets it on his right boot. Lines back inside 50.
Hugh McCluggage was good, and the Brisbane midfield were all over that Melbourne midfield, and really they got the ball heading in their direction, and that allowed those forwards to deliver in the manner they needed to. So I think it can be a win that kickstarts Brisbane's season. Slow start, but the season finished late and started early, so it's tough for grand finalists. We've seen that with Collingwood as well.
The other game I'm especially interested in this round is Dogs Bombers Friday at Docklands. We've heard about the Essendon edge. Is there a chance they're about to fall off the edge of a cliff this weekend, Benny?
There is every chance. So this feels like a massive early season game that the loser will absolutely be fitted up by all of the media here in Melbourne and across the country as to where it's all going wrong. So a lot of us look at the Western Bulldogs and think, gee, that's a good midfield. You've got the best player in the game, Marcus Bontempelli. You've got Libba, the extractor, so Liberatore. You've got Treloar in there with a little bit of speed. You've got all of the elements you need, and yet it's not working. And we look at them at the moment, and they've had a lot of their salary cap playing in their VFL. So Rory Lobb, who they're paying good money to, Jack McRae, for whatever reason, has seemingly fallen foul, taken a while to get back in. You know, Caleb Daniel, who clubs love and are interested in now, given he's out of favour at the Bulldogs, hasn't been playing. So I don't know what is going on with the Bulldogs. And then Essendon, fascinating to hear club champions like Matthew Lloyd say something just isn't right at the club.
Speak to some people and they go, just not, the club just doesn't have the feeling of what it used to have. There's just something not quite right in this football club.
I don't know what it is. So I'm looking at the three C's, cattle, coaching or culture. I don't know which of those three it is, whether it's a combination of all three, but something is not right at the Essendon Football Club.
The other C at the ABC is Cameron, Ben Cameron. You can hear him and the team call AFL all weekend long on the ABC. Listen up, Benny. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure, Pat. Anytime.
Nick Kempton is here to talk National Rugby League. So much of the conversation this week has been around Michael Jennings as he chalked up NRL Game 300 playing for the Roosters in last night's win over the Knights. Campo, why, for those who haven't been paying attention, was it controversial to see him leading out the Chooks ahead of their victory?
Yeah, so Michael Jennings returned to the NRL this season after serving a 3-year suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. And in that same 3 years, he was involved in a civil case with his ex-wife, where she accused him of sexual assault during their marriage. And the civil court ruled that he had to make a payout to his former partner. He returned to the Roosters this year on a train and trial deal and ended up earning a contract. The NRL was willing to register the contract, and then Jennings has played 2 games in the last 2 weeks and notched up his 300th game. Normally, that's a really big milestone for any player. Andrew Abdo is normally on hand to present the game ball to the player. There's normally an extra zero drawn on the 30-metre line to commemorate the achievement. But none of that happened this time. The NRL sort of came out during the week and said that they would not celebrate Michael Jennings in this way because of past conduct. The Roosters sort of did what they could.
As Michael Jennings is coming out first with his children, and there's a real mixed response from the Hunter Stadium crowd here for Michael Jennings' 300th game.
I actually think the NRL created a bit of a rod for their own back with this one, because either a player is a fit and proper person to be registered and to play this sport, or they're not. And in trying to sort of have him play but not have him be part of the league in the way that other people are, the NRL just opens themselves up to criticism of Jennings being registered in the first place. And it takes something that was already a controversial issue and makes it look like the NRL didn't consider all the possibilities at play when they made this decision. So, yeah, I think the NRL's really put themselves between a rock and a hard place on that one.
That is a tricky off-field story. Beautifully explained, Campo. Let's pivot to on-field. Enormous fixtures this weekend. As the Battle of Brisbane on Friday, it's got to be the headliner. What's at stake for the Dolphins and the Broncos?
Well, what I love about the Battles of Brisbane, Stacky, is it's only been around for a season and a bit now, but every time these two play, it feels like a really big deal. You know, it feels like bragging rights are on the line. Because the Dolphins are at the top of the ladder and the Broncos have a couple of guys out with injuries, I think this is an even bigger game than usual. You know, the Finns are first on the ladder but haven't really played a team of true quality yet. They've sort of been feasting on sides that haven't been doing that well.
The men from the peninsula have started season 2024 in Finn fashion.
And the Broncos, through this injury crisis, are now maybe looking at the... They don't need to get their act together, but they need to start showing some of the great footy that we all know that they can play. And it's some of the footy that they played last week in their loss to Melbourne. You know, Reece Walsh is back for the Broncos. That's a really big inclusion. He loves big stages, loves big games. He gives Brisbane a lot of their swagger that makes them so dangerous.
It's Luttrell and bounces favourably for Walsh. Walsh leaps with the light into the Caxton Street in goal.
The Finns have had a couple of key outs. Two former Broncos, Tom Flegler and Herbie Farnworth, both ruled out this week. It was a real shame. I would have loved to have seen them take on their former club. I'm not expecting this one to be easy for Brisbane, but I think they'll just have a little bit too much spark to them.
Talking South Sydney, and when coach Jason Demetriou today walked out on a press conference after 27 seconds when he was asked if he was coaching for his job.
I believe I'm coaching for a great performance this week, and that's what we'll get. Thank you.
That's it.
It kind of spoke volumes about what's going on at the club. Also speaking volumes, the fact that he dropped star hooker Damien Cook for a must-win game. Can you explain the layers to this one?
It's no secret that South Sydney have been enduring a really, really difficult season, and some of their biggest names have really not been playing their best football. You know, Damien Cook among them. He's been one of the top hookers in the league for 5 or 6 years now, and dropping him is a really big call from Jason Demetriou. We can never know what he would have done with Luttrell Mitchell if he wasn't suspended this week. But if he was willing to drop Damien Cook, part of me believes that he would have been willing to maybe not drop Luttrell Mitchell, but certainly maybe shift him to the centres or something like that. You know, it does really feel like it's real get-out stakes. It's drinking at the last chance saloon for Jason Demetriou this week. Honestly, with some of the talk this week about Mal Meninga and Wayne Bennett and succession plans for South Sydney and all that, at some level it might seem like the Rabbitohs have already made up their mind, win, lose or draw. But you would think that a loss would just about seal his fate. Are they going to be able to dig deep and play hard for this coach who's been there for a good couple of years now and led them to a fair bit of success? Or are they going to keep sort of producing the footy they've produced over the first 5 weeks of the season?
Scoots, goes himself to Marty Martin, scores the try next to the upright. Well, that's too easy for the Warriors. South Sydney goal line defence there is really disappointing.
Against a Cronulla team that is really dangerous on both sides of the field, some of the best attacking players in the league, it would be a tall order in any game. But you add the stakes, you add sort of the heightened sense of what's at play here. And yeah, it's as big a game as the Rabbitohs have played in a very long time.
You can read Nick Campton's analysis at abc.net.au/sportcampo. Thanks for your time, Matt.
No worries, Stacky. Thanks for having me.
Time for sound bites. Have you ever said something you really didn't mean like that, but you can just tell it's going to look really bad and now you're digging a hole and it's making it worse and dig up, stupid? It's not a great feeling, is it? Well, a commentator at the Masters lived a version of this, talking about Scottie Scheffler's sister during the par 3 comp where she was helping caddy, obviously.
Sister Sarah Scheffler. A little fat, a shot. She's obviously very thin.
You can actually hear his brain working in real time there. Cringe. You know who never makes us cringe? Mary Fowler. She's been stuck on the bench for Man City. Have a listen to her mentality on that.
But I think that's part of it, you know, that's football. And I think to see how that's kind of shaped me as a person has been nice. What was important was that, like, in the trainings, even at club, like, I always try to bring my best to that. And I always felt like even if I wasn't playing, like, I was deserving of it and I was still able to be at that level, like, I wasn't on the bench because I wasn't any, like, less than the players that were starting. So I think the belief in myself was still very much there. I do think overall it's been a nice part of my journey and a part of my journey where I've grown quite a bit as a person and player.
Wish I was that mature at 21. Hey, now would probably be good too, wouldn't it? You know what else is good? Violinist Evangeline Victoria cranking Seven Nation Army ahead of the A-League Melbourne Derby. She was loving it, and we loved it in return. Victory 1-2-1. Evangeline won the night. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to Channel 9, Fox Sports, and the A-League for the extra audio used in this episode.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.